Back in on the Morning Blitz, GameDaySportsRadio.com. Boji Wood with you this morning. As we look forward to the Super Bowl next weekend, we've got a chance to catch up with Mike Bernard, OTM Sports, based out in Las Vegas for the first time this week. Want to go back, Mike, and talk about the NFC and AFC championships. But, hey, you've been on you've kind of been off the grid this week.
Yeah, well, I was actually out in Vegas for the championship weekend, so now I'm back here on the East Coast. But it's tough when you have 2 hours or 3 hours time difference and try to do your normal work. But it was a fun weekend, and, hey, the game, you couldn't ask for more exciting games. They both go to overtime, and the top four offenses in the league squared off on Sunday. And the first one was the Rams getting the win over the Saints.
Yeah, 26-23. And, of course, before we get into the minutia of the game, the first time – I know it's not the first time that we've had a championship game go to overtime, but it's the first time both of them have gone to overtime, correct?
That's what I read, and I don't recall – I've been doing it 25 years, and I don't recall both going in. And in fact, most of the time, the championship games, the home team wins, you know, rather handily.
Yeah, the first game that I remember, championship game, I remember going to overtime was back in, this is like either late 60s or early 70s, Kansas City and Miami. And kind of ironic that wasn't played in Arrowhead. This was before they opened Arrowhead up. Kind of ironic, though, that Kansas City involved in a couple of those. But let's move into that Rams-Saints game. Of course, the Rams win 26-23 on a 57-yard field goal in overtime. Had to come back and kick one at the end of the game to send it to overtime. But, Mike, of course, you know, you can forget about individual players' performances. You've got to talk about that call at the end of regulation, or actually a no call at the end of regulation. Again, from a coaching standpoint, I've always, you think, well, calls are going to equal out over the course of the game. But in a crucial spot like that, from a coaching standpoint, that just eats you up, especially when it's one that is so blatant. Now, how did that call, did it affect any of the wagers and any of the outcome of the wager, so to speak?
Oh, well, of course, it does. It affects the outright winner where people play the money line. Not only that, I was out there and we had several plays on proposition plays, and it affected that as well. That call, I don't know how it's missed. I'm not going to blame the receiver at all, but I do think – that the coaching staff around the league, they should look at that, because the very elite, the greatest receivers, they sell that better. He could have like tried to go through the defender. Now the referee should have made the call regardless, but I feel like these receivers, some of them, they don't do their best to create the contact when it's already created and basically do like they do in basketball and flop. And then when he hit the ground, he didn't even get up and look at the ref like, hey. So I was surprised at that, but it was just a blown call. And so many times, whether it's basketball or football, the referees, they don't want to make that call, and their excuse or their reasoning is they don't want to decide the game. Well, that no call decides the game, because, Coach, you and I both know if that's called pass interference, they just take a knee and run the clock down to 3 seconds and kick a chip shot.
Correct. And from a coaching standpoint, I look at it. Of course, I'm a defensive guy, but there's no doubt that it was pass interference. And on top of that, forget pass interference, because I don't know if you heard this. I heard this in some circles saying, well, they thought the ball was tipped. The officials thought the ball was tipped at the line of scrimmage. That's why they didn't call the pass interference call. Of course, the ball wasn't anywhere close to being tipped.
Right.
But let's just say that it was tipped. It was still, and again, coming from a defensive guy, it was still helmet-to-helmet contact. He launched into the receiver. No, so even if the pass interference call shouldn't have been called by a tip ball, then you still should have the targeting and launching call that was made. So I look at it, he not only missed one call, and I say he, it was several officials. And Mike, I'll tell you, we've tried to get several officials to come on the show this week to talk about it and made it up front. Look, we're not asking you to throw anyone under the bus or anything like that. Nobody will touch it. Nobody will touch it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and they just don't want to get on there and point out the obvious that it was blatant errors, it was incompetence, because there's three officials in position where they can throw the flag. Numerous times we see plays downfield where there's three or four flags thrown from different officials needlessly. Mm-hmm. There's not one thrown here. Mm-hmm. And, I think in college, every play – well, I know every play is reviewed upstairs, but they can go back and review targeting, even if it's not called on the field, and that would have been the only thing to right the justice in this situation.
Correct, because going back to the phantom tip ball excuse, that doesn't hold water with me. And again, I'm speaking from a defensive standpoint here. Is how that happens is the back judge and the side judge and the field judge, the guys who are basically responsible for downfield pass interference, they're not looking at what's happening at the line of scrimmage. You throw the flag, it's pass interference, then the umpire and the referee, they call you together, say, okay, we've got pass interference down here, okay, but we had a tip ball at the line of scrimmage, and they picked the flags up. So, again, that's another reason that the tip ball excuse doesn't even hold water with me whatsoever. There has got to be a way to rectify situations like this. I've been a strong proponent of a couple of rule changes. One rule change in the NFL, and again, this was not relevant in this game per se, but I've always thought that inside of the 2-minute warning of each half, you should stop the clock on a first down, because players, defensive players especially, can delay the ball getting set. Some officials move at a faster pace than others. There's nothing uniform about sitting the ball after a first down in the NFL. So I think inside of 2 minutes, stop the clock after a made first down. And the other thing is the challenges. I say give each coach can challenge. They can challenge every play if they want to, if there's something to challenge. And it boils down to this. You throw the challenge flag, and if your challenge is upheld, then you don't lose a timeout. If you throw the challenge flag and you lose your challenge, then guess what? You've lost a timeout. So you've got up to three challenges per half if you want them. And make it to where calls like this that are so obvious can be reviewed.
Right, but you can't review pass interference, and they can't the coaches in the NFL, they can't challenge a targeting. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how you do it. You can't make pass interference a part of replay, the same as you can't make offensive or defensive holding, because the game would never complete. Mm-hmm. It's just, bottom line is it was incompetent by the officials. And it was three of them that can make that call. And you make the great point. And I made that same point to someone when I was out in Vegas. Look, the tip ball is just not being accountable for your actions or non-actions in this mm-hmm. case. It's just an excuse, because that you see that all the time. That's what the umpire mm-hmm. or the the head of a referee, he makes that call mm-hmm. if it's tipped, or the line judge, right?
It's usually either going to be the umpire or the referee, because those are the guys that are the referee. His main focus is the quarterback, protection of the quarterback. And then, of course, the umpire is looking at the interior line. So they're for holding and whatnot, so in hands of the face. So they're going to be the two that have the best view of a tip ball. And, of course, we've seen this over and over again. You see it in high school. You know, you see it in high school, you see it in college, and you see it in the NFL. You know, flags are thrown, officials congregate, talk about the call. And then if the flag needs to be picked up, they pick it up. But, again, if you don't throw the flag, you can't pick one up.
That's right. And, you know, we spent this whole segment talking about that non-call. And there's a lot of other things in the game that went on to where that non-call takes away from. First of all, the game-winning field goal, that kick would have been good from 70. Mm-hmm. And you're talking about the pressure of going to the Super Bowl and Zuerlein hits a 57-yard field goal. And if he misses that, then, of course, the Saints are in prime position, because then in the NFL, unlike college, in the NFL, if you miss the field goal, the opponent gets the ball where the ball is placed, where it's held. Mm-hmm. So that was a clutch kick. Some other interesting things I noticed. I don't really know what's going on with Todd Gurley. I don't know if he was hurt or if he was in the doghouse, but he was on the sideline a lot in that game.
I have heard through the grapevine that he is not fully recovered from that injury, and he tried to go as much as he could, because if you'll notice, it was later on in the game when the Rams really started getting C.J. Anderson involved, and he was the leading rusher for the Rams with only about 44, 45 yards. But, yeah, Todd Gurley is not healthy yet, and hopefully this week break, before having to play against the Patriots over here in Atlanta in the Super Bowl, hopefully he can get better. I don't know if he can get completely well or not. I don't know if any NFL player, except for maybe some kickers and punters, are completely well at this point, and second-string quarterbacks are, 100% well at this point in the season, at this juncture. But, however, Gurley is just not the same running back he was before that injury.
I agree, and look at C.J. Anderson. I believe this is his third team this season. He's been cut and cut, and we've seen the running back position be relegated to plug and play, and they're not as important. But C.J. Anderson, he's probably the freshest running back in the league because he had so few carries, and now he's in the Super Bowl.
Correct. And let's not forget Jared Goff. This young quarterback, 25 of 40, 297 yards and a touchdown. He's playing like a seasoned veteran.
He is, and you could see he was not comfortable early on. They're down 13-0, and I think it was his first time in this situation in the NFC title game. And I could see a little nerves, but as the game went on, he got more and more comfortable, and he did. He looked like a veteran in the second half, and he made good decisions, and especially, two key drives. I remember him showing a lot of poise. So he's improved greatly, and this is only his second year, right?
Third year. And we also have to give a lot of credit to Coach Sean McVay. Falling behind 13-0, the Rams could have panicked. He kept them in their original game plan, and it paid off.
Yeah, and Coach, he's younger than a lot of the players in the league, and he is a super hot commodity, as is a lot of his assistants.